The Path of Heaven by Chris Raitt. Read by John Banks. The noblest kind of retribution is not to become like your enemy. Marcus Aurelius, circa M1. Part 1. Chapter 1. 1,000 years might pass, and it would never lose its fascination. He ran his eyes down the edge of the blade, watching the light glint from the metal. This sword had drunk deeply of blood, both Xenos and human, yet now it was pristine, unmarked, as clear as when it had left the forge fire. For 200 years he had tended it as a mother tends a child, restoring it, respecting it, returning it to the ebony-ringed scabbard with a benediction to the weapon's soul that had never failed him. Now he turned it again, watching the lumen glow run down the pressed steel. The shallow curve held no flaw, not even so much as a notch to mark the years of service. He held it loosely, relying on its weight to keep it balanced in his hands. He had once fought the Eldar Xenos on a world where the stone sang and the sky screamed, and he had remembered ever afterwards how those warriors had fought. The creature's speed and precision had outmatched that of his brothers, and that had rankled ever since, for his legion was one that valued such things. So he had learned, and studied, and honed the craft, and every hour in the practice cages brought a scintilla of improvement, though he knew it would never be enough. In any case, the days of fighting Xenos were gone. The war had changed, and he was expected to test his sword's edge against those he had once called kin. In the beginning, that had been difficult. Now it was second nature. The blade still cut as deeply and as well, and he had learned to find the hard beauty in killing his own. His thoughts were interrupted as the lumen above his metal bunk pulsed softly, and he lifted his head from study. He knew without having to check the ident rune where the communication came from. Only the ship's commander would dare make contact during designated meditation hours. "Yes?" he asked, sliding the blade back into its scabbard.
"Lord, your pardon," came the voice of Harkian, shipmaster of the Suzerain. "The scryer has detected incoming warp wakes. Your activation is requested."
Before the man had finished speaking, Ravage Kario, prefector of the 3rd Legion's Palatine Blades, had reached for his helm. His ceramite face guard was lacquered violet and blue, streaked with inlaid gold and blazoned with platinum, but not defiled in the way many of his brothers had defiled theirs. The time for that would come. Perhaps, but not yet, not while he was yet to become the fastest he could be, the most precise he could be.
"What does he predict?" Kario asked, making for the meditation chamber's door.
"Unknown," replied Harkian, "though in all probability..."
"The Warhawk," said Kario, striding out into the corridor even as he twisted his helm's atmosphere seal into place.
"Good.
Then let it begin anew."
Battlegroup Jewel Shard re-entered real space, carving a trail of glittering molecular interference across the void. The fleet formation's escort shot ahead like thrown spears, twisting as their plasma drives keyed into full power. The core of the battle line slipped into the physical realm behind them, void shields sliding across flanks lined with heavy ordnance. Every ship in that flotilla was in a state of transition. Some war vessels looked much as they had done at the outset of the Great Crusade. Others were unrecognizable. On the most affected, gunwales were crested with writhing golden gargoyles. Vent housings were engraved with a filigree of platinum, shaped into unsettling formations, and collated effigies of carnal excruciation had been scored across the panels of the plowshare prows. The command spires had seen the greatest augmentation, with crystal bridges spanning the pinnacles and arcane energies snaking amongst the comms veins. On the bridge of the lead cruiser, an Avenger-class veteran named the Ravisher,
Legion Consul and Orchestrator Azael Kononos adjusted his position in the command throne and studied the incoming position runes. Around him, the clamor of the bridge space passed in a fog of muffled murmurs. His auditory organs were fused and melted and warped together, bulging out from his neck and swelling across his upper back, capable of appreciating a far greater range of sound than ever before. But the price of accessing this enhanced spectrum was impoverishment within normal frequencies.
"Confirm this," Kononos said. His voice was metal-edged, filtered through the coiled tubes that had punctured his throat since Istvan III. "Rich hunting," came the reply of his vexillary, Galien Irato, standing a few feet from the throne and gazing intently at banks of bronze-rimmed data screens. Irato was beautiful, even amongst a legion that had ever been beautiful. He was tall and slender, with golden skin and bone-white hair. Since the scouring of the Halida Togat, he had taken to stitching patterns into his exposed flesh with black agony wire. Sutures now crisscrossed his cheeks and forehead, every so often flaring dull red as random pain pulses fired. Every other soul on the bridge, whether of the Legion or one of the hundreds of mortal serfs and servitors who attended to it, had been improved. Skin was puckered and ruptured, pulled tight or pinned back, rouged, roughened, plucked clean and studded with blood-washed jewels. The low thrum of the main drives was punctuated by ritual screams from the decks below, marking the ship's ascent from the Empyrean. Irato threw a hololith array up into the fore bridge space, collating it with the astropathic screeds burbling from the shackled stardreamers.
"Word from the suzerain," he reported. "They have their targets and are moving to engage. I warned them to hold, but still they are moving."
"Of course," murmured Kononos. "What else?"
Irato's lips twitched, snagging the stitches at the corner of his mouth.
"Three incoming formations, moving fast on the Memnos convoy."
Kononos leaned back. The Third Legion's warfront had become vast beyond all reason, stretching out in a huge arc across the galactic plain, from Taras to Morox. Resupply had become erratic, plagued by warp loss and counterstrikes from the fragments of loyalist legions that remained to contest the shrinking borders of their imperium. Bulk carrier convoys had been hit repeatedly, the vessels either plundered or destroyed, slowing the relentless grind towards the throne world and drawing combat units away from the cutting edge. It could have been any number of raiders. It could have been the dregs of the legions they had broken at Istvan. It could have been elements of the Imperial Army, still so vast that trillions remained alive despite more than 4 years of relentless culling. It could have been Xenos, though precious few of those degenerates remained to draw breath.
"Him, then," Kononos said.
"Yes," agreed Irato.
"Jagatai."
For years uncounted, the white scars had been an irrelevance, something to be reminded about in between greater endeavors. Now, though, with the might of Ultramar contained behind the galactic fracture of the Ruin Storm and Dawn's Praetorians leashed to their master's fortifications, only the unregarded Fifth Legion still remained in sufficient numbers to trouble the War Master's main onslaught.
"You have analyzed the attack?" asked Kononos.
Irato nodded.
"Yes, but the convoy is not the target."
Irato inclined his head in agreement, and Kononos found himself distracted by the patterns of wire across golden flesh. Kononos had seen Irato shred enemies using the power of sonics alone, and death amid such a vortex of divinely honed sound was a fine thing to witness.
"They will strike there first," said Irato,
his soft eyes locked on the hololiths.
"They will hit the convoy, but that will be to draw us out. They are trying to pull the fleet together, away from where they truly desire to hurt us."
"And where would that be?"
Irato smiled.
"There are 100 targets, Orchestrator. Would you like me to select one at random?"
"It will become apparent. The Hawk's tricks are growing old. Signal the suzerain that we will send 3 destroyers to their position. If they wish to preserve the Memnos convoy, that is their choice. But I will not commit a greater force until we have seen the true hand of the enemy."
Irato bowed.
"And then we inform
Him. Kornos rose from the throne, feeling the tug of the barbed nails that had been inserted under each rib of his fused organ cage.
We do it now, he said. It was never a good idea to keep the soul severed waiting.
The ship was the Proudheart, and the name had once been deserved. Its commander had never truly relinquished the reputation it proclaimed, not even in death, which was less of an impediment to continued service than it had once been. The battleship's flanks had been as deeply changed as any other war vessel of the Third Legion, and now swam with color like spilled oil. Its hull was enormous, a Dictatus-class carcass studded with silver-moored weaponry, powered through the abyss by ancient engine furnaces. The scars of 100 campaigns still lingered on its gilt-edged flanks. Joviana, Aptva Aption, the Dalinite Nebula, Leran, Murder, Istvan III, Istvan V. Once those old plasma burns and solid round impacts would have been scoured from the adamantium plates post-action by whole armies of void drones. Now they were left in place, picked out, made into decoration by gangs of indentured artisan slaves, years of warfare recalled in a vast metal tapestry. Deep inside the Proudheart's outer shell, the corridors echoed to new sounds. Frenzied cries came from the bowels of the ship endlessly, filtered and directed through transit shafts all the way to the exalted heights. Every shriek resampled and reworked by banks of auditory processors until the walls shook from the overlapping layers of curated anguish. The mirrored panels of the interior were streaked with blood, left in place to turn darker, lit up by floating lamps of paper, wire, and pearl. Nothing was erased, everything was savored, all was illuminated. In its past, the Proudheart had been like other Imperial battleships. It had employed a day-night cycle based on the patterns of its legion's homeworld, bringing a rhythm of light and dark to the vastness of the city in space. Now the lumens were never doused, and the clamor of an eternal day was never stilled. Menials had their eyelids sewn shut, and their ears excised to keep them from going insane amid the eternal brilliance of it all, though many still succumbed. Those who did were replaced by VAT-enhanced analogues, built from the embryo to withstand the cacophony, the flamboyance, the terror. Striding among that misshapen horde were the vestiges of the Emperor's Own, once the most unsullied of legions, but which had flown closest to the sun. They had purged their ranks of waverers on the bloodied fields of Istvan III, and now numbered only the devoted among their number. The brothers who embraced the new path, who revelled in it, who strove for sensation with all the zealotry they had once reserved for martial exactitude. What they had lost in dignity, they had gained in pain-racked power. Gifts came with mutilation, changes that once they would have shrunk from, but which now made them conduits for a greater deadliness. Their armour had warped, cracking and blistering as the flesh and iron within twisted into new shapes. They toyed with their sacred gene architecture, willingly submitting to the knives of their apothecaries, who in turn had become the most exalted of their number, a priest caste of flesh artisans commanding power over life, death, and the various chartered states between and beyond. For Von Calder, one of that cadre in addition to being equerry to the Lord Commander Primus, the elevation had been a mixed blessing. He strode from the Proudheart's underbridge antechambers and up the winding glass stone stairways. His fingers still glistened from the Medicae slabs, sticky under the inner film of his battle gauntlets. The armor he wore bore the ivory sheen of his old order, though lined now with purple lacquer. His strangely childlike face remained creased in concentration as he went, locked in the one task, the sacred task, he had set himself, while elbow deep in the entrails of his subjects. And yet, when the soul severed demanded attention, the summons could not be ignored. Von Calder crested the stair summit and moved across a crystal courtyard overlooked by burnished images of dead-eyed serpents and eagles. Ahead of him, the gates to the Lord Commander's sanctum slid open soundlessly. The chamber inside was cloaked in shifting shadows, lit by vain blue lamps that hovered soundlessly on cushions of anti-grav. Metal bulkheads above creaked and flexed, as if caught in a strong wind, though none stirred in that filtered atmosphere. The Proudheart was a home to more than mortal souls now, and in every crevice and foreshaft, the echoes of empirical denizens hushed and slithered. The soul severed, like all of them, had endured a long period of flux. He sat on a throne of fluid bronze that melded to his armor-clad bulk. The Lord Commander Primus had eschewed a gorget and helm, exposing the long scar on his neck that he seemed to take as a sign of strength. To be killed, by the Primarch no less, and then reconstituted by the command of the same executioner, struck many in the Legion as a symbol of the new gifts they had won with so much labor. Eidolon was the first of the immortals, the first of those to show that death and life were mere facets of a deeper existence. At first, he had been known as the Risen. That moniker had quickly begun to feel insufficient in its description of him. He gazed down from the throne with the dull-eyed, listless mien of the Camosian aristocracy. Every look, every gesture implied ownership, the kind of acquisitive superiority that brooked no argument or dissension. In what remained of the Third Legion's military hierarchy, that still counted for much, although there were many, Lucius perhaps foremost, who had treated it with a contempt that came from equal ambition. Von Calder had no idea why Eidolon had been brought back. Perhaps it was a whim, born of a newborn god's boredom. Whatever the reason, the Lord Commander Primus had not remained long by Fulgrim's side, and had taken nigh a third of the entire Legion's strength under his own direction, giving no indication that he was following anyone's orders but his own. Such was the way of things now, a galaxy of confused and overlapping loyalties, obfuscated by the clamor in the warp and the impossibility of long-range communications. They were all fighting in the murk, clawing their way towards Terra like blind men scattered by the wind.
Corinus makes contact,
Eidolon said, gazing languidly at Von Calder from his high seat. His voice was a rasp, still tight from where his throat had been cut.
What has he found? Asked Von Calder, bowing formally.
The Memnos convoy has attracted warpwakes. It will be hit.
He asks for ships.
No.
Eidolon's irises had been replaced by iridescent jewels, and they glinted now with a tactician's enthusiasm.
He reads it aright. This has the stink of barbarism.
As he spoke, a silver dream font slid up from the marbled deck. Von Calder stepped back, allowing a 5-meter-wide column of bone and lattice inlay to rise to its full height. The water's surface began to ripple, and a faint hiss echoed around the throne chamber.
Too long since we were given a chance to take him by the throat,
Eidolon drawled, watching the water's surface slide. The dream font was a recent addition to his arsenal of arcane devices. Astropaths and demon-bound psychers had been drowned in the machine, locking their visions into the water. Now it only reflected the dreams of the souls quenched within it, vomiting out their desperate nightmares when the waters boiled.
This thing cannot be trusted, Lord, warned Von Calder.
True, but what can?
Water spilled over the edges, frothing as the torrent cascaded through twists of bone. Reflective light angled up into the chamber's heights, dancing like marsh gas. The hissing grew in volume, joined by the dying echoes of old chokes. Soon enough, the images came. Von Calder witnessed the ghostly orbs of worlds they had burned, the armies they had ground into the dust. Sigils snapped into focus briefly, the spidery motif of the Forge World, Gorentes, the chevrons of the Nighthouse Praster, the endless imagery of Imperial Army regiments, now all destroyed. Cities drifted into view, planetary systems, deep void installations, fleet docks, all ruins, scoured down to ash by the remorseless advance of the War Master and his brothers.
Tell me, what do you feel when you see this?
Eidolon asked. His withered, rust-edged voice made him sound more than half machine.
Only pride, said Von Calder. There will be more to burn before the end.
Eidolon looked down sourly.
And terror is the crucible. Fabius has already drawn up the experiments for it. I have seen them.
Von Calder did not ask how Eidolon could have done so, nor what the Legion's apothecary general had planned. For the time being, Fabius remained with the Primarch, who was far off, silent and sundered by the wrath of the warp. Instead, Von Calder, who had plans of his own, concentrated on the dream font's imagery, knowing that Eidolon placed faith in it, even as he himself did not. So many bound souls of so many seers, it would tell them something, even if it did not deserve the name of anything like truth.
An infinite universe to twist, the apothecary murmured, and still we cleave to this goal. Terror, the throne world, and nothing else matters.
The shifting light of the dream font played across Eidolon's scarred, haughty face.
But that is all there is, my brother, he said. We came from terror. We return to terror.
Eidolon's cheek twitched, exposing the tight skein of sinew that Fabius had painstakingly re-knitted.
And besides, we are changing. Our pleasures will soon be our masters. While we remember how to order a legion, we must make the most of it.
The dream font's visions intensified. More planets swam up out of the ether, many wreathed in cold silver flames. Von Calder saw the worlds they had most recently subdued for the Warmaster. Lermia, Erwa Nha, Gobal, Heravale, Moreb Ten. The orbs traced a scattered line across the physical void, a necklace of embers strung out in a trail under the spineward curve of the galaxy. The bulk of the fighting was in the galactic west now, the most extreme edge of Horus's long warfront. Greater forces drove hard up the center, grinding onwards under the leadership of the Warmaster himself.
The Memnos convoy,
said Eidolon, his eyes narrowing.
Where does it supply?
The Geist narrows, materiel, troops, provisions. The narrows are unsecured, only fallen for 2 months, Terran standard. If the supplies do not arrive...
Then nothing of importance will be lost, said Eidolon. The fodder carriers will be hit. That will draw a response, and then the real target will be chosen. But what? Where do they wish us to weaken ourselves?
There were over a dozen garrison worlds within range, 100 armed strongholds, 20 exposed battlefronts, all of which had their own strategic value. Von Calder saw no pattern. A loosening of the hold on the narrows could be countered and draw little strength from the surrounding regions. It could be a token move, the telltale of an enemy that was running out of resources.
Consider our enemy, said Eidolon. Consider his strengths, his weaknesses.
The Warhawk, said Von Calder.
None other remains. What is his position?
Dispersed. Strategos record 19 strikes in 3 months, 13 of which were repulsed. The tally of losses will be hurting them. He musters surely now for a final assault.
That would be against 4 legions, and he has not the numbers to take on more than one. If I were the Khan, I would be looking for a way out.
But he will not run.
He will have to. He wishes to see terror before the end, just as we all do.
Eidolon pressed his fingers together. Von Calder could see the old mind was still active, undimmed by the physical changes that Fabius had wrought.
He knows the truth, even if you do not. This thing will be decided at the palace, and he will not risk being cast adrift while we break the walls down. He needs to turn now to get out of our pincer. See the void through his eyes, apothecary. See what he sees.
Von Calder returned to the dream font. He saw the channels of the warp, the paths embedded in the stolen minds of drowned navigators. He saw the distribution of the Warmaster's forces encircling, cutting off, stifling lines of retreat. Eidolon's battalions had not been the only hunters trying to run down the white scars. 1,000 salients jutted into the void, smothering all ways through the turbulent ether. They all had standing orders. Eliminate the threat of the flanks, clear the way to the solar system, and hastened the coming of the end. Kalium, said Von Calder at last. He will attempt the Kalium Gate. Eidolon raised a stitched eyebrow.
Tell me why.
The Memnos convoy remains deep in conquered space. Its loss will draw forces from three sectors of the advance lines. If he provokes them fully, that will weaken the Gamati sector, but he will not assault that region, for it is laid waste now and has no value for either him or us. He may, though, use the Gamati's margin to force passage under the galactic plane. The Kalium system can be taken if they move in numbers, placing the gate in range, which remains clear of the ether storm. If he can seize the subsector before a reply is made, he will have his passage home. Eidolon nodded slowly. The dream font seethed, as if in congratulation.
Good. And yet, this is a false hope, for the gate cannot be forced. Its foundations were broken by Perturabo, and the storms now rage as wildly there as they do in every other sector.
Eidolon drew in a long, wheezing breath, making the sutures along his throat flex.
But the Khan cannot know this. He makes the feint and hopes to send us chasing after him into Memnos, freeing his path to Kalium.
The Lord Commander Primus rose from the throne and drew himself up to his full, crooked height. Eidolon's movements had once been fluid, but were now those of an old man, made halting by the life-sustaining poisons that coursed through his ravaged frame. Only his voice still made him deadly. The swollen auditory augmetics and bloated throat sacs that could unleash his flesh-ripping hurricanes of sound. Von Calder looked up at him with a kind of fascinated loathing. He would have loved nothing more than to put his master under the knives, to delve into the scars left by resurrection and uncover the secrets that had created such a glorious monster. The vision he had already endured would be augmented by such a subject, though that was impossible. Perhaps one day, when the war was done, and there would be leisure to do so. But for now, he merely bowed in supplication.
Assemble the fleet and send word to Konnenos,
Eidolon ordered, limping down the throne dais steps to the chamber's floor.
Send a token force to aid the suzerain. Then order rendezvous with all other elements in the sensor shadow of the gate. We will make passage to Kalium as soon as our brothers join us.
By your will. Von Calder followed Eidolon down the polished processional. And if I may, the Primarch? Eidolon shot Von Calder a dry smile.
If you can locate our beloved father, then by all means inform him. Pinning the Khan down might drag him from his indulgences, though I doubt it.
He limped on, clearly still racked by the pain of his transformation.
There will come a day when we are not bound by the wills of those child gods. For now, we must do as we have learned to. Prosecute their wars. Pretend we are the masters of our own fate.
His gold-edged boots scraped against the marble as his feet dragged.
But what dark jests this universe plays on us all,
Eidolon rasped.
And what fools it chooses to tell them.
On the bulk carrier Tercephalion, lead vessel of the Third Legion's Deep Void Memnos convoy, shipmaster Eleonora Culber pushed her way up to the observation bridge. A lifter servitor blundered out of her path, snorting stupidly through iron mandible guards. She reached the doors and thumped the access panel. The electronics clicked twice before the pistons finally released and the rust-pocked metal shunted open. Fael Alibus, her second-in-command, was waiting for her on the far side, as was the sable-robed navigator Cavelli. Beyond them, the low-curved roof of the Tercephalion's bridge extended down towards rows of armored-glass viewports.
"Gentlemen," she said crisply, "with me."
The three of them proceeded down the main gantry. A thin line of pressed metal hanging over pits crawling with indentured bridge crew. The space stank of corrosion, human sweat, and machine lubricant. Ahead, the void peered down at them through the lead lining of real viewers. Culber hated the sight of it. She spent most of her time lodged down in the inner cortex hull of the bulk carrier, avoiding staring out into the infinity of nothingness that it was her curse to ply. She had never wanted to sail the void, but as the Great Crusade had sucked resources from every world in the burgeoning Imperium and stripped planets dry of those with any degree of capability or nous, eventually the summons had come her way, and the agents of the Administratum had made it clear to her where her destiny lay. To make it worse, she had discovered that she was good at it. Piloting a bulk carrier was a peculiar skill, a cross between spire administration and freebooting. She was tough. She had a healthy covering of fat. She was perpetually angry, all qualities that had served her well in the auxiliary fleets of the Imperial Army in its spread across the stars. The old army and its command structures were now gone, of course. Kalba's loyalty, for what it was worth, was to the Memnos Combine, which had long been in fealty to the sectoral command at Leob, which had once been under the authority of the Terran prefecture of Fides, but for 2 standard years now had been subsumed into the growing hinterland of tribute worlds harvested by the Third Legion. Through them, she supposed, her fealty now belonged to the supreme authority of the Warmaster, but in truth, it made little difference where the orders came from. She made a living. The food cylinders kept coming. The ships were repaired and kept in order. There was danger, but there always had been. Her masters had always been distant, her goals obscure. She did what she did. The days passed, and other minds plotted the greater progress of the Imperial dream. The void remained hateful, though. Nothing would ever change that.
"Signals, you say?" Kalba said, pulling a data slate from her grease-spotted tunic.
Not from us, said Alibus, scratching one of his chins. Second hand, out of the fleet.
Who in the fleet?
The Suzerain, a Legion ship.
Recognize it?
No, it's still incoming.
They reached the main viewing platform. Above them, a crystal-flex dome opened up, webbed with metal and streaked with aeons-old void grime. Kulba took a deep breath and looked up. Half her convoy was visible out there, hanging above the Tercephalion in a procession of immensity. Angle-sided and heavy-jowled, the big haulers stretched off into darkness, their thrusters burning low orange. Each ship was over 50 kilometers long, though almost all that bulk was given over to colossal series modules, packed with ranks of shackled container units. No human crew member went into those cavernous spaces, for the only populated sections of the ships were the tiny blisters on the forward hull ridge, where the cortex bridges were lodged. Everything else was silent, enclosed, locked down, sealed in. Kulba saw the underside of the Revo Satisa slide above them, and watched the rows upon rows upon rows of stowage modules pass in stately sluggishness. Beyond that ship was the Daughter of Leob, and beyond that was the coldest stars.
How soon until we break the veil? Kulba asked.
3 hours,
replied Cavelli, softly. Kulba didn't look at him. She didn't like navigators either. They made her spine creep with their third swathed eye and their parchment skin and their shuffling. Cavelli smelt bad too, always had. The stench was something faint, undefinable, a pheromone or some other spore of mutation.
We could make the jump now, she said.
Then we would lose a third of the convoy,
said Cavelli, smiling apologetically.
I do not have the manifolds for 9 of the haulers.
And we have orders, Alobus reminded her. Legion orders.
Kulba hawked up spittle and sent it sailing over the gantry edge. Void nausea pulled at her innards. The stars glinted back at her from beyond the crystal flex bubble, malicious, eternal.
How close are they?
She asked, resigned to more waiting in real space. The sooner the convoy pulled into the turbulent hell of the warp, the sooner they would know how many of them would make it to the Narrows in one piece. Alibus consulted the snake-head chrono-auger embedded in the back of his hair-flecked hand.
Less than... well, I am mistaken. Getting something now? They must be early.
That was when Kulba knew. They were never early. The Third Legion were degenerating fast, but they were still sticklers for detail, and if they had given a chronomark, they meant to keep it.
"Dispatch all pickets,"
she ordered, narrowing her eyes, peering out into the dark.
"Tell them, if they see anything on intercept, open fire."
She pressed the alert bead on the inside of her palm and felt sweat there. Olobus looked at her, uncertain.
Ma'am, do you...
Say nothing.
Kalba saw the plasma bursts of thrusters firing as the convoy's escort spiraled out to the margins, taking up fire lattice positions. The bridge's lumens sunk down to combat red, and flare marks appeared on cogitator consoles.
If you wish to do anything now, double-check this Legion communication and hope it proves accurate.
The void behemoths made no course correction. It took hours just to calibrate them for a change of trajectory, and unless that was done, they would keep plowing along the same vector until the last supernova in the galaxy blew itself out. Their picket fleet, around 50 lance-bearing sub-warp corvettes, reached the perimeter of the defensive envelope and took up station. Cavelli drew in a breath and closed his natural eyes. Kulber turned on him.
You sense something?
He gave her another one of those damnable half-smiles, but kept his eyes closed.
I am an old man. In truth, I feel lucky to have made it this far with you.
As he spoke, every cogitator console across the bridge suddenly went dark. Void navigation sigils flickered out, and the lumens overhead began to fizz.
Get them back on,
shouted Kulber, rounding on the hubbub of her crew down in the pits. As they struggled to restore command, the silent flash of lasfire burst out from the void. The consoles cleared. Initially, three lines of text in standard Gothic scrolled down the screens, clear enough for Kulber to read even at distance. Oath breakers, you are now judged. We are the punishment. Kulber knew that every officer on every bulk carrier would be reading the same thing.
Stay at your stations,
she bellowed, turning back from the real view portals and striding down the gantry.
Pull in manifolds. Prepare warp cycle for ignition.
That last order was a nonsense. Even if Cavelli had initiated his preparatory studies, it would still have taken too long to key in the warp drives. But she had to say something. For the first time in her long and mostly hateful career, she was entirely at a loss. Kulber made it 5 meters down the gantry before the first physical impact came in. She heard a hard smash somewhere high up in the Cortex Bridge's anterior shield cluster, followed by the shriek of metal being torn. The text on the console snapped out to be replaced by an image, a stylized lightning strike across a horizontal bar.
What is that?
Demanded Kulber, reaching the nearest viewer screen and grabbing it with both hands. More crashes from up above followed, and the oculus was riven with flashes of silver. Alibus was frozen with indecision, but Cavelli started chuckling. Kulber pulled the screen from its housing and whirled to face the navigator. She thrust the image at him.
What is that? You know, don't you?
Cavelli nodded.
And if you had studied the livery of mankind's legions, sister, you would know it too. But what does this matter? Any one of the Cartomancer's 20 visions would be more than enough for us.
Kulber threw the screen down and grabbed Cavelli by his robes. The navigator's old body felt like a sack of bones under the rich velvet.
What does it mean? She hissed.
Cavelli opened his mortal eyes and gave her a steady look, free of either fear or hope.
Nothing made by the hand of man moves faster, he murmured,
lost in something like awe.
They are magnificent. But let me tell you one more thing of them, for it is the last you will ever learn.
He leaned closer to her, and his breath, scented with cloves, brushed against her face.
They are still laughing.